Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, Social Circle residents rally to oppose a planned ICE detention facility. Delta Airlines provides some flexibility for passengers amid the TSA crisis. And a bill to improve police interactions with people with autism is poised to become law.
For parents and individuals with autism spectrum disorder, a regular traffic stop can quickly escalate into a sensitive situation.
Today is Thursday, March 26th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. A coalition of environmental groups is suing to stop Georgia Power from generating more power to support data centers. The state's Public Service Commission gave the company permission in February to add close to 800 megawatts. That's enough electricity to power the households of Macon and Savannah combined. Most of the new generation would produce climate-warming carbon emissions. In a lawsuit filed yesterday in Fulton County Superior Court, attorneys from the Southern Environmental Law Center argue on behalf of environmental groups and some religious organizations that the PSC's decision exceeded its authority. The lawsuit alleges Georgia Power failed to provide any objective proof of their data center energy projections. Attorneys are asking the court to rescind the permission for the new power generation. In a statement to GPB, Georgia Power called the lawsuit, quote, a simple attempt to create economic and regulatory chaos. Delta Airlines is extending its flexibility for travel waivers for passengers flying in and out of Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. The move announced yesterday comes as long security delays at the world's busiest airport continue because of the partial government shutdown. Delta customers with travel plans involving ATL through March 30th can rebook travel on or before April 6th without penalty. Separately, the Atlanta-based airline said it's extending its pause on flights to Tel Aviv through September 5th as the war in Iran continues. Congress is under pressure to fund the Department of Homeland Security ahead of its upcoming spring recess this weekend. Without funding, the Transportation Security Administration may have to shut down operations at some airports. Delays persist at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson, where on Wednesday, 41% of TSA employees called out sick rather than work without getting a paycheck. When the paychecks start coming again, how quickly will airports get back to normal? Let's turn again to Ram Chalepa, professor at Goizueta Business School at Emory University, who studies the airline industry. Thank you for speaking with me again.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
So it seems unlikely at this point, but let's say Congress reached a deal and passed legislation to pay TSA workers. How quickly do you think operations at Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson Airport would return to normal?
Well, it won't be immediate. I would say it would at least take 2-3 days at the minimum to get back into action. I mean, we have to rearrange and reorganize. I mean, this is like whenever there is a break in operations and when we come back and staff those resources, it's definitely going to take some time to get back into it because we are going to see some bursty traffic in terms of the planes and so on. So yes, it won't be an immediate thing.
But you think it's a matter of days, not necessarily weeks?
I would hope it's a matter of days because these are professionals. They know what they were doing. And so we don't have to essentially retrain them, but it would be in terms of how prepared is the airport in terms of rearranging its operations rather than retraining the personnel.
More than 480 officers nationwide have quit during the shutdown. That's according to DHS. Generally speaking, when that many employees quit, are they hired back? Are they hired back quickly? What happens?
In theory, hiring employees back as opposed to those who called out sick is a more complex topic in the sense that whether or not the rules require them to go through security checks, whether they would be considered new employees, how would their tenure previously be considered, all of those things now once again come into play.
Overall, though, has this, in your view, done damage to TSA's reputation as a good employer, given how this has now happened twice in the past year?
Absolutely. I mean, in the sense that, this is one of those components, parts of the part of the government where you are dependent on the budget. And if it appears for an average employee that they are subject to the whims and fancies of our government and Congress, then clearly this is not a secure employment as one would think about when they think about government employment.
Is there a more permanent and stable way to make sure this is less likely to happen again?
Well, I guess, we have observed that there are a few other airports that are using private contractors, and they have not been subject to these congressional sort of dilly-dallying that's been happening because they are budgeted up front and they're contracted on a private basis. And also, I believe we should find a way to ensure that these folks are not subject to these annual sort of discussions that happen, because we are always at this nexus, at this precipice in terms of what is going to happen to them.
The New York Times is reporting that ICE agents at Atlanta's airport are now checking IDs in an attempt to speed up the long security lines. If Congress passes funding for TSA agents, do you see ICE moving out of airports and resuming their more traditional roles?
I would think so. I mean, this is not their mandate and this is not what they are trained for. So if TSA comes back, then they would be doing their job and their duty, which they've been doing for a very long time. In a post 9/11, a clear charge has been given to them. So I would think that it would be TSA agents that would be manning the gates and manning the security points and so on.
And what should lawmakers be thinking about when it comes to how long they should fund a deal for TSA workers' pay?
I think one of the elements for us to probably think about is the horizon for which this funding comes back. If it is going to be another 2 weeks, another couple of months, and so on, that would be a concern because FIFA is coming. A whole number of people are going to arrive in Atlanta. And so we have to have a longer horizon when we think about this.
Well, Ram Chalapa, thank you so much for speaking with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Opponents of an immigration detention facility planned for the city of Social Circle took to the state capitol today to speak out, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Community members and activists cited concerns with infrastructure and economic impact and say they are exploring legal options to stop the facility altogether. Some Social Circle residents, like Valerie Walhart, say they need more transparency regarding the plans for the facility, even if they can't stop it.
We just want to know that our water, roads, schools, and loved ones will be respected and kept safe for us to use, travel, and cherish.
ICE purchased a warehouse in Social Circle earlier this year that they plan to convert to a detention center for up to 10,000 people. That's roughly double the city's population. Local leaders say they lack water and sewer infrastructure to house that many people. So far, the Department of Homeland Security has shared no details on how they plan to deal with that. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis at the State Capitol.
Large language models like ChatGPT and Claude have cemented themselves for many as an AI tool to find and apply for jobs. While efficient, these interfaces require tweaking if they're going to work for all job seekers, like those with learning differences or intellectual disabilities. GPB's Sophie Gratis has more.
Anyone who's used generative AI chatbots to help get something done has probably noticed how generic its assistance can be.
If you just come into it and say, hey, I'm looking for a job, what should I do? It has almost no information about you.
Mark Riddell is with the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Tech. He says most AI chatbots basically need to be trained to understand personal preferences. For people who already have trouble organizing information,
you really kind of want to have a dashboard that really kind of displays things in the right order, helps you work through a particular flow.
So that's how Riddell and a team of engineers designed their AI job coach for job seekers with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
So I'm going to work.
Jennifer Kim helped put it together too. She uses a fake job seeker, Alex, as an example.
And here is his resume. And he has bachelor degrees in cybersecurity and mathematics.
Once Alex's resume is uploaded, a chatbot sends prompts.
I am looking for a career direction.
They decide on a goal and a colorful checklist pops up. Alex's skills and strengths get broken down into job categories, and another prompt brings up actual job listings.
That's doing levels of complex processing that a person with an intellectual disability is going to have a lot of difficulty with.
Heather Dix is a human job coach at Georgia Tech. She says it can also help her neurodivergent students feel more confident.
They're open to it. They're excited about it. They've even participated on some levels in developing their own job coach.
The team plans plans to use more feedback from students before making the tool public. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
A bill aiming to improve law enforcement interactions with people with autism is headed to the governor's desk. The legislation would create an optional license plate symbol for drivers with autism or parents of children with autism. Armurchie Republican State Representative Eddie Lumsden says the bill also creates a special training program for law enforcement officers.
For parents and individuals with autism spectrum disorder, a regular traffic stop can quickly escalate into a sensitive situation. Many individuals with autism have sensitivity or communication differences that might not translate well when interacting with law enforcement.
The bill received unanimous and final passage yesterday in the House and now waits for Governor Brian Kemp's signature. The bill is called Rio's Law, named after a boy with autism whose mother, Layla Luna, advocated for a similar law that passed in South Carolina after a difficult traffic stop. The federal government has not yet replaced the bullet-pocked windows that serve as a grim reminder of last year's attack at the Atlanta headquarters of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. GPB's Chase McGee reports on an update provided yesterday.
CDC employees asked the agency's current acting director, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, about the broken windows during a staff meeting, noting that the panes were papered over. Bhattacharya said the agency was working on repairing the windows and that it is a priority. Other CDC officials said the window replacements will begin in the next month or so. In August, a 30-year-old man fired nearly 200 shots into the campus and broke about 150 windows. The shooter died at the scene from a self-inflicted gunshot wound after he killed a DeKalb County police officer. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
The Atlanta Symphony Orchestra announced its programming for the 2026-2027 season yesterday. GPB's Amanda Andrews reports this year's performances will focus on the works of Johannes Brahms.
The 82nd season of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra includes 24 shows and two world premiere performances. The symphony will also welcome Berlin-based pianist Anna Ganushina to Atlanta as artist in residence. Ashley Marakian with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra says one of the premier works will be a tribute by composer Jasmine Barnes to honor an Atlanta human rights legend.
We performed one of Jasmine's works on our concert that we had at Ebenezer Baptist Church for the King celebration. And so we have invited her to write a piece in honor of Coretta Scott King's 100th birthday.
The first show of the upcoming season takes place September 16th. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
As the U.S. Treasury ends production of the penny, some transactions in Georgia could go up or down. State lawmakers are considering a bill that would round cash transactions to the nearest nickel. Rome Republican State Senator Chuck Hefstetler says the idea is pretty simple.
If your total comes out to one or two, you round down to zero. If it's three or four, you round up to five. If it's six or seven, you round down to five. And if it's eight or nine, you round up to 10.
Credit card or other electronic transactions would not be affected. The bill passed unanimously in the Senate yesterday and now goes back to the House for a final vote. Georgia is one of several states considering legislation to round transactions to the nearest nickel as pennies gradually disappear from circulation. In Georgia sports, the Atlanta Dream is adding more games at State Farm Arena to its 2026 season, which begins in May. The WNBA franchise said yesterday the move responds to fan demand. The team usually plays at the smaller Gateway Center Arena. It played one game at State Farm last year and will play five games at the larger venue this year. Also, Arthur Blank is continuing to remake his soccer franchises. Yesterday, the business icon announced a new president of soccer for his MLS Atlanta United team and his still unnamed NWSL team, which will debut in 2028. Mauricio Culebro is the new executive. And Augusta National is expanding coverage of the Masters. The golf club today released its broadcast schedule for the tournament, which begins on April 9th. A new deal with Prime Video expands on coverage provided by CBS and ESPN. A new exhibit at Savannah's Telfair Museums is the first major retrospective of an art colony that produced an enormous amount of work on Georgia's coast for about two decades. Ossabaw Island is a remote, undeveloped barrier island just south of Savannah. And from 1961 to 1982, it hosted big names in American art, literature, and science. The colony was overseen by the island's matriarch, the woman largely credited with saving Ossabaw Island from development and turning it into Georgia's first heritage preserve, Eleanor Sandy Torrey West. The exhibit, Off the Coast of Paradise, is curated by her grandson, New York-based art historian Beryl Gillith West. He spoke with GPB's Orlando Montoya.
So what was it like growing up on Ossabaw Island? It was incredibly magical. I had, you know, the run of these woods and marshes and beaches. We had, you know, wild boar running around. I first learned to ride on a big wild boar that my grandmother kept as a pet at her house. So it was just kind of like a wonderland for a kid.
So you know what kind of an inspirational place it is. Does it surprise you how many artists have been inspired by Ossabaw Island?
It wasn't surprising at all as I was researching this exhibition to find out the many, many different kinds of ways that artists drew inspiration from Ossabaw. Because, you know, it's a beautiful environment there. I mean, the southern coast is famous for that. But there's also an enormous amount of history. There's so many different aspects of it to draw inspiration from.
And what I like about this is that it's not just inspiring people to paint marshes and trees. There's different types of inspiration based on the person. So can you talk a little bit about what's in the exhibit and what people can expect to see?
Yeah, I mean, there are beautiful photographs and paintings of the landscape, but there's also some more unexpected artworks. We have photography, sculpture, painting, drawing, film. We have some textiles. It really runs the gamut.
Let's talk about one of those artists, if we could. The acclaimed mid-century sculptor Harry Bertoia. What was his relationship with Ossabaw Island?
My grandparents invited him down to Ossabaw in 1961 to help weigh in on their idea to launch an interdisciplinary residency program on the island. And during Bertoia's visit, they took a trip out to South End Beach. And Bertoia had this a bit of an epiphany while he was there. He witnessed the way that the tide was encroaching on the shore and kind of killing the trees that were right behind the beach and turning them into these kind of sculptures of their own in the midst of the sand. And he, drawing inspiration from these sort of very primal forces of the environment, he created an entirely new form of bronze casting for a major commission at Dulles International Airport in Washington, D.C., which you can still see in the airport today. Basically, instead of pouring bronze in a form, he poured it onto the ground and allowed it to make its own form. He made this huge, colossal work for the airport, but then also created a number of standing pieces on a much smaller scale, including one that he donated to Ossabaw and the programs there in 1966. And that work will have a prominent place in the show.
What is it about the island that inspires people so much?
I mean, we can look at all of the various attributes, and they're all really interesting, but there's not one way to experience it. And because it's cut off from the mainland, you have to get there by boat. It's undeveloped. The people who spend time there aren't having to deal with the pressures that we have to cope with, you know, living in modern society.
Beryl Gilleth-West, thanks very much for talking with me.
Thank you. And thanks for all your support for Ossabaw over the years.
That was Beryl Gilleth-West talking with GPB's Orlando Montoya. The exhibit, Off the Coast of Paradise, Artists and Ossabaw Island, 1961 to now, opened on March 13th at the Telfair Museum's Jepson Center for the Arts and runs through September 6th. And that's a wrap on Georgia Today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you come back tomorrow, subscribe to this podcast, and check gpb.org/news for updates. If you've got feedback, send it our way by email. That's the best way to reach us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.